Good evening and welcome to the fifth presentation and this our 12th series of talks on faraway places with strange sounding names, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Kutz and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at Western, I coordinate this series with my absent colleague Peggy Wright and with assistance from our instruction coordinator Brian Carson and our webmaster Haiwang Wan taking pictures at the back. Christopher McConnell designed our poster, and our technical specialist tonight is Daniel Pollard. Our speaker tonight is a native of Albacete, a market town located in southern Spain, where his family has lived for generations in a region immortalized in Cervantes' Don Quixote de la Mancha. Growing up, he thought of becoming an actor, but then turned his attentions to the more practical field of English philology. He studied humanities at the University of Castilla-La Mancha, where he later earned a doctorate in English philology in 2007. He currently teaches English at the School of Industrial Engineering at this same school. His research interests are in the field of comparative literature, especially on American and British authors since the 19th century, such as George Orwell and Ernest Hemingway. These two writers are discussed in his recent book, Tres Visiones de España Durante la Guerra Civil, where he analyzes the image of Spain during the Spanish Civil War from 1936 to 1939. His research also explores the relationship Ernest Hemingway had with Spain, which is the theme of tonight's talk. He's currently in the United States with his wife, Isabel, on a research trip. And when not teaching or writing, he enjoys cycling and takes part in many races as part of an amateur cycling team. Please give a warm welcome to Professor Ricardo Morin. Ricardo?
Well, first of all, I would like to appreciate the presentation by Dr. Kutz and his invitation to take part in this series, Faraway series. And I would like to thank everybody for attending this talk. Well, one of the most interesting aspects when approaching Ernest Hemingway's biography is his persistent tendency to leave behind his homeland and embark on different adventures and enterprises outside the US, which would be to a large extent the breeding ground of many of his works. In fact, a big deal of his stories and novels are settled in different foreign countries, such as Italy, France, Cuba, and Spain, among others. In contrast, few American locations can be found in his writings, like Oak Park, his hometown near Chicago, on which Hemingway wrote very little, and Northern Michigan, where he spent his childhood summers fishing and hunting. Though many of the pages he wrote contain references to those places, none of them had such a strong effect on him as a person or as a writer as Spain did. For example, Michigan had been spoiled by the massive cutting of the forests, and Italy had succumbed to the fascists during the First World War. Whereas Spain was the only good country left. Spain was a turning point in Hemingway's life and literary career, as on the one hand, he discovered in this country new facets of some topics he had been obsessed with, such as death and violence. And on the other, his best and renowned works were inspired by his experience in Spain. The encounter between the writer and this country was a sort of love at first sight. Soon after his first trip to Spain, Hemingway would state in a letter that Spain was the greatest country of all, I quote, and spoiled and incredibly tough and wonderful. According to these words, the reasons why he loved the country were very similar to those declared by the Romantic travelers, who 100 years earlier had seen in Spain one of the few places which had not been corrupted by modernization yet. When Hemingway discovered Spain, he was just a young man
who had experienced the terrible modernized slaughter of World War I caused by the new destructive weapons. Having escaped from such dismal scenery, it is no wonder that Hemingway found in Spain a virginal and authentic paradise, a place which was not then under the devastating and unifying effect of the modern industrial civilization spreading all over Western countries. That Hemingway discovered Spain was just a matter of time, if we take into account that the spirit of the writer was always essentially romantic. But what must we understand by romantic? In my opinion, it is a synonym of individualism, personal bravery, love for danger and risk, a firm will to fight against the violation of civil rights, and an inclination to self-sacrifice and self-destruction. It also means an innate tendency to expatriation, to feel uprooted from your own country, to traveling to marginal and exotic destinations, and to know picturesque and unheard of cultures. We could also add to these features a certain existential desperation, a sense of being tired of life, which drives the romantic spirit to a constant search for action in order to mitigate its existential emptiness. Therefore, it is understandable that Spain, a country with picturesque social and cultural particularities, which had been the destination for writers like Byron, Dumas, Washington Irving, and others, did not go unnoticed for a romantic personality such as Hemingway's. Besides the romantic charm of Spain, which the author could see in the beauty of the landscapes, in the amazing historical heritage present in every village and town, or in the picturesque places scattered all around the country, what really made Hemingway be so fond of Spain was its inhabitants, as he soon realized that the Spanish people lived according to a set of values he felt deeply identified with, such as rebelliousness, individualism, or a fatalist vision of life. He felt particularly attracted by the humbleness and the childlike primitivism of workers and peasants, their capacity to endure hardships, and their complying resignedly with the plans of fate. Due to his obsession about death, he also admired the particular and almost mystical attitude towards death which the Spanish people staged in the bull rings. Those who are slightly acquainted with the figure of Hemingway may argue that he visited Spain many a time because he sought to witness bullfights and enjoy lively festivities while he ate delicious food and drank superb wines. Up to a point, they are right. But this view of the vital and literary universe of Hemingway is rather superficial and simplistic, and it does not succeed in grasping the reasons which explain his love for the Spanish culture. It is true that, as we are going to see later, many of his trips to Spain were motivated by his liking for bullfights and all the enjoyable paraphernalia around them. But it is also true that he attended bull rings very often because he saw in the fight between the beast and the man the reflection of those features of the Spanish people he became so keen on. Bravery, pride, individualism, and a peculiar and attractive way of understanding their relationship between life and death. His understanding of la fiesta, as bullfighting is known in Spanish, did not have to do with its conception as a touristic and picturesque show. By seeing beyond the material aspects of the tragedy performed on the arena, Hemingway, as any other writer in English, understood toreo and its context like the Spanish true aficionado did, that is to say, from a spiritual or mystical point of view. On the first pages of Death in the Afternoon, he says, "So I went to Spain to see bullfights and to try to write about them for myself. I thought they would be simple and barbarous and cruel, and that I would not like them. but that I would see certain definite action which would give me the feeling of life and death I was working for. Having been described bullfighting as a romantic passion for many foreigners due to its singular and dramatic rites, and also for the singularity of its emotive and aesthetic nature, it is no wonder that it did not take long for Hemingway to feel attracted by this Spanish tradition. The romantic sensibility finds in bullfighting an aesthetic showdown between man and death, where the former challenges the latter with arrogance and bravery, creating, as Hemingway points out in Death in the Afternoon, an atmosphere of emotion, intensity, and pure and classic beauty. Whereas the romantic traveler saw essentially in bullfighting an aesthetic experience, Hemingway provided it with a mythical and religious meaning. The treatment of the bull as a sacred animal in many Mediterranean religions was a topic which had aroused the interest of the writer. Hemingway found that the same religion was preached in bull rings, where the matador was the priest conducting the ritual, which finished with the death of the animal in front of the devout public. The sacred meaning he gave to bullfighting is explicitly shown, for example, on the last pages of Death in the Afternoon, where he states that the matador, Zurito, healed like a priest who gives the blessing. It is at the moment that the bullfighter administers, in Hemingway's words, death, that a religious ecstasy takes possession of the whole bull ring, an emotion which is aroused when the matador conveys his feeling of immortality to the crowd. According to the author, the bullfight has then a cathartic effect on the spectators, inasmuch as one can experience a refreshing and pleasant feeling of freedom. In The Sun Also Rises, the narrator relates the performance of the bullfighter called Pedro Romero and underlines the sort of religious ecstasy which took control of the audience. I quote, "The crowd made him go on. They did not want the bull killed yet. They did not want it over. And each pass as it reached the summit gave you a sudden ache inside. The crowd did not want it ever to be finished." Hemingway makes a new reference to his collective hysteria in Death in the Afternoon, where he talks about, and I quote again, "the faena that takes a man out of himself and makes him feel immortal while it is proceeding, that gives him an ecstasy as profound as any religious ecstasy. Moving all the people in the ring together and increasing in emotional intensity as he proceeds. That is capable of moving the spectators in a growing ecstasy of ordered, formal, passionate, increasing disregard for death. As an initiated in the ritual of the corrida, Hemingway often took part of this enjoyable sensation, and we must see here one of the main reasons which drove him to the shrine of the bull ring, where the audience found in the ritual which intermingled life, death, and beauty a way of deliverance. But deliverance from what? In general terms, we could point out the constraining limitations and meanness of everyday life. More specifically, Hemingway escaped momentarily from the traumatic memory of his father's death, the distressing psychological consequences of war, the degradation of the natural environment where he had spent his childhood, or the unstoppable spreading of a cold and humane mercantilism throughout the U.S. At the beginning of Death in the Afternoon, Hemingway alludes to his state of well-being while contemplating the bullfight. I quote, "I feel very fine while it is going on. I have a feeling of life and death and mortality and immortality. And after it is over, I feel very sad, but very fine." Other contemporary English-speaking writers such as D.H. Lawrence, Gerald Brennan, Robert Graves, Lawrence Darren, showed a similar attitude of rejection to an excessively mechanized society which was turning the world into a wasteland. Perhaps this religious and sacralized vision of bullfighting was inspired by what several Spanish artists and thinkers had expressed on the subject. For example, sometimes Picasso provided his bullfighting paintings with a religious meaning, and Hemingway himself quoted a phrase of the painter in which bullfighting was strongly linked to a sense of mystery and mysticism. I quote, "You know, it's absolutely the only thing left in the world." Not unlike Picasso, the poet Federico García Lorca once remarked that the only serious thing in the world is toreo, stating that toreo is the liturgy of the bulls, the authentic religious drama where, just as in the mass, there is the adoration and sacrifice of a god. The first time Hemingway trod on Spanish soil was in January 1919, when he stopped briefly in the south of Spain on his way back home from Italy. In December 1921, he came to a halt in the northwestern town of Vigo before resuming the journey to Paris with his first wife, Elizabeth Hedley. Despite having spent just a few hours in this place, Hemingway would have vivid memories of the bay swarmed with large tuna, and that there were trout in the mountains and wonderful swimming as well. He would also recollect that you could stay at the best hotel for only $1, and that the wine was incredibly cheap. 2 years later, he visited Spain twice. The first time was during the months of May and June, when he had the firm and only purpose of watching bullfights. This trip would be a sort of therapy for Hemingway, as he felt in a depressive state raised by the difficulties to publish the story My Old Man in an American magazine. Not even the beauties of Paris could cheer him up. It was not until he was about to set out for Spain, accompanied by the publisher Bob McCallman, that he started to smile again. The trip to Spain turned out to be really positive for him, and bullfighting had a lot to do with it. Not in vain, friends like Gertrude Stein or Mike Strader predicted that Hemingway would love bullfighting. Strader provided him with helpful information about Spain. He gave him a reasonable, well-drawn map of Spain on the back of a restaurant menu, and the names of several places he should visit, such as a little restaurant in Madrid, famous for its roasted succulent pig, mushroom tortilla, and wines from La Rioja, and the name of a guest house where bullfighters used to live. It was the capital of Spain where Hemingway attended his first bullfight. McCallman and him went to the bull ring carrying a bottle of whiskey, in case they need alcohol to counteract the effects of the shocking spectacle on the arena. The reactions of both men to the bullfight were completely different. McCallman would write 10 years later, "At first, it seemed totally unreal, like something happening on the screen. The first bull charged into the ring with tremendous violence. When the horses were brought in, it charged head on and lifted the first horse over its head. But the horns did not penetrate. Instead, a shock of disgust, I rose in my seat and let out a yell. Later, however, when one of the horses was galloping around the ring, treading on its own in trails, I decidedly didn't like it. I resented the crowd's brutality and the way people threw mats and articles of clothing into the ring at moments in which the matadors were in danger." Hemingway, on the contrary, was overcome by excitement, as we can see in his article for the Toronto Star. He seemed like some great prehistoric animal, absolutely deadly and absolutely vicious. He charged silently and with a soft galloping rush. When he turned on his 4 feet like a cat. When he charged, the first thing that caught his eye was a picador on one of the red horses. The picador dug his spurs into the horse, and they galloped away. During his stay in Madrid, The American writer had the opportunity to meet several bullfighters in the pensión, which is the Spanish word for guest house, in Calle San Jerónimo, which a stranger told him about. Hemingway stocked up on a great deal of colloquial Spanish and a fairly exhaustive technical terminology about bullfighting. Having accompanied some of them to Seville for the feast of Corpus Christi bullfight, Hemingway McCalmont, who Bill Byrd, the future publisher of In Our Time, had joined, went to Ronda, a beautiful mountain town in Andalusia, that Hemingway always loved, and then to Granada, which turned out to be a letdown. The bullring was beautiful, but the scheduled novillada, which is a fight with young bulls, was rained out. Moreover, he found the gypsy caves, which were one of the main touristy attractions of the town, a bore. Shortly after his first visit, Hemingway returned to Spain with Elizabeth to attend the San Fermín Festival, which took place in Pamplona during the first week of July. We can figure out to what extent Hemingway loved bullfighting to take his wife to Pamplona in the fifth month of her pregnancy, and to name his first son, John Hedley Nicanor Hemingway, after the great bullfighter Nicanor Villalta. It was a night when they arrived in Pamplona. The streets were crammed with people, and there were music bands, dancers, and fireworks everywhere. Ernest and Elizabeth had to struggle to make their way in the middle of that jolly mob. In the end, they succeeded in reaching the hotel where he had reserved a double room 2 weeks earlier, but no room was then available. The landlady offered them a single room for $7 apiece or a better room for $10 apiece, but Ernest said that it would be better to sleep with the pigs. Finally, the landlady told them that she could get them a room in an old house where they probably spent the best week in their lives. They went everywhere together and saw wonderful things. Encierros, in which men ran before the bulls through the streets at dawn, beautiful girls, the lively atmospheres of the cafes, etc. Moreover, Hemingway, who had become a true aficionado, had the opportunity to see 8 of the best matadors fight in Pamplona. The recent experiences in Madrid and Pamplona provided the author with the materials to write 5 sketches included in our Time collection. Since the series of etches painted by Goya called Tauromaquia, nothing had conveyed bullfighting so intensely as these sketches. Such intensity may be attributed to an almost instinctual understanding of bullfighting, which turned him into a synonym of this tradition. When people thought about bullfighting, they immediately thought about Hemingway. He was really enthusiastic about many sports, but it was different with bullfighting. For him, he was not a sport, he was a tragedy symbolizing the struggle between the man and the beast. The writer and his wife Elizabeth returned to Spain in 1924. Their first stop was in Madrid, where they stayed in the same boarding house frequented by bullfighters in which he and McCalmont had stayed the previous year. On this occasion, Ernest and Elizabeth went to Aranjuez, which is 20 miles away to the south of Madrid, where they witnessed another brilliant performance of Nicanor Villalta, who killed 6 bulls that afternoon. Later, they set off for Pamplona, where the festivity of San Fermín was being celebrated. Once again, Hemingway lived in an almost constant state of ecstasy while he stayed in that town. He would write later that San Fermines were, and I quote, sorry, "the goddamnest wild time and fun you ever saw." On this second visit to Pamplona, fun was even higher as Ernest was surrounded by some of his best friends, like Don Stewart, Bob McCalmont, or John Dos Passos. Every morning, Hemingway went to the bull ring with some of them to take part in the free-for-alls, where amateurs were permitted to brave small bulls whose horns were padded to avoid serious injuries. During five straight days, he would enter the ring and entice a bull to charge by waving a red cape and shouting, "Hu, toro, toro." Then the animal would run against him and he would grab the animal by the horns, twist its neck and take it to the ground. Though he was not willing to join the fight, John Stuart got himself involved involuntarily one morning. While Hemingway was in the arena making an exhibition of courage, Don could see how a boy leapt over the barrier looking for shelter when he was running away from one of the bulls. The youngster then thought that he was safe, but he was not indeed. The animal could leap after him, and several spectators, dos pasos among them, who stayed behind the barrier, left their seats and went up the grandstand. However, Don, overcome by fear, jumped into the arena. Then two boys lent him a cape and drove him before another bull, and he could not do another thing in that embarrassing situation than trying to fool the animal with his cape. Once the festival of San Fermín was over, Hemingway, Elizabeth, and their friends went to the mountain town of Burguete, near the French border, to fish trout in the Irati River. His enthusiasm about the Spanish people and bullfighting extended to fishing. In a letter to his wartime friend and fishing pole, Howell Jenkins, he wrote that fishing in the Irati was like trout fishing on the Black in Michigan, and that fishing wasn't spoiled because there were no roads. In July 1925, Hemingway traveled to Pamplona for the third time, now with a new group of friends, Patch Guthrie, Duff Twisten, Harold Loeb, etc. On this occasion, they first spent a week fishing in Burguete, and then they went on to the fiesta in Pamplona. If there is a word to describe this third visit to the north of Spain, that is disappointment. First of all, the crystalline waters of the river Hemingway remembered from 1 year before were now full of logs and trash, which had ruined fishing. Secondly, Pamplona had been profaned by American visitors coming from France who had discovered the San Fermines. Don Stuart lamented that the Garden of Eden was over, and they all resented hearing English in every corner. They also complained about the difficulty to get good tickets for bullfights and the prices of hotel rooms, which had increased dramatically. At least, the trip inspired Hemingway to lay the fictional basis of The Sun Also Rises, which it would be his first novel. Having been originally titled Fiesta, which is the title which has been used for the Spanish translation, the book stemmed from the desire Hemingway cherished by April 1925 to write a work on bulls. As soon as the fiesta in Pamplona ended, the Hemingways headed for Madrid, where the couple was shocked by the performance of the matador called Niño de la Palma, who was creating a great sensation among aficionados. Valencia, San Sebastián would be the next destinations in this Spanish tour. Meanwhile, Hemingway is set to produce the rough draft of The Sun Also Rises, whose pages were of a shockingly low quality. In 1926, the author spent 4 months seeing bullfights. This time, he was accompanied by his wife, Hedley, Gerald Murphy, and his spouse, and Pauline Pfeiffer, whom he would marry the next year. In 1827, Ernest and Pauline came back to Spain to stay the greater part of the summer. Albeit Pamplona had to evoke bad memories for Hemingway due to the frequent quarrels he had with Hedley there, Ernest visited the town once again. Afterwards, he and Pauline decided to go to San Sebastián to swim, and later on to Madrid and Valencia, which were unbearably hot. Fortunately, in the last week of August, they found much nicer and fresher locations were to spend their last days in Spain, like the northwestern towns of La Coruña and Santiago de Compostela. After a break in 1828, Hemingway returned for the summer season of 1929, during which he met the American matador, Sidney Franklin. He would not be back in Spain until 1931, when he was attending bullfights from May to September in search of materials for his bullfighting book par excellence, Death in the Afternoon, released 1 year later. Before the Spanish Civil War broke out, Hemingway had reflected his enthusiasm about bullfighting in some of his most celebrated articles and literary works. The first writing in which the author talks about bullfighting is the article Bullfighting, a Tragedy, published in the Toronto Star on October 20, 1923. Having been written after witnessing his first bullfight in Madrid, Hemingway, through his writing, describes in great detail the showdown between the matador and the bull and shows a fair comment of the bullfighting jargon. It would not take long for the author to convey his passion for bullfighting on his literary works. For example, in Our Time contains several references to some bullfighters, like Nicanor Villalta and Manuel García Maera. Later, the world of bullfighting would be present through Pedro Romero, who is a character inspired on a homonymous bullfighter from the 18th century, and on Cayetano Ordóñez as well, with whom Hemingway established a close friendship. He concentrates on Romero those values he had discovered in bullfighting, such as dignity, courage, and pride. His next book, the collection of short stories titled Men Without Women, also contain references to bullfighting. In the first of these stories, The Undefeated, Hemingway relates the life of the bullfighter Manuel García, who struggles against adverse circumstances to continue with his career. Further stories from this collection also have connections with bullfighting, such as Banal Story or The Killers. In his next collection, The Fifth Column and the First 49 Stories, the author continued to deal with the topic of Torero, as we can see in The Capital of the World. The main character of this story is Paco, a young waiter who is killed when one of his partners accidentally stabs him while they were simulating a bullfight. Death in the Afternoon is the book where bullfighting becomes the main topic. One of the most interesting aspects of this work is the deep knowledge of the Spanish culture and personality which Hemingway acquired through bullfighting. Allusions to the fiesta are noticeable in For Whom the Bell Tolls, probably the best book by the American author. One of the main characters, Pilar, recollects her love affairs with several matadors during her youth. Moreover, her narrations are fraught with the names of bullfighters like Joselito, Chicuelo, and Ignacio Sánchez. However, they are not the only references to bullfighting, as it can be seen, for example, at the end of the novel, when Andrés remembers the bullfight he had witnessed when he was a child. Bullfighting would be a relevant topic for Hemingway until his last works, such as A Dangerous Summer, in which he focused on the bitter rivalry between the matadors Luis Miguel Domínguez and Antonio Ortón. Bullfighting was something more than a journalistic or literary topic for Hemingway. It was also a sort of values and ideas which became the symbols of his works, such as the interest for violence and death. The author identified in bullfights a behavioral pattern which, in his opinion, helped through courage and perseverance to face an increasingly irrational and violent world. Those heroes created by Hemingway after the publication of Death in the Afternoon in 1832 behave in this way, unlike former characters who show themselves as weak and vulnerable before the drawbacks of life. Along with bravery and determination, the author extrapolated other values present in bullfighting, like the tragic vision of life or rebelliousness, not only to Spanish, but also to foreign characters having no apparent relationship with Spain. This is the case, for example, of Santiago, who personifies in The Old Man and the Sea the struggle between conservative and destructive impulses, which Hemingway found in the Spanish personality. The Spanish Civil War broke out in July 14, 1936. 13 years had passed since the romance between Hemingway and Spain has started. Therefore, it is no wonder that he did not remain impassive before the outbreak of the conflict. His involvement with the Spanish people and his love for the country were strong enough so as not to take part in what he described as the dress rehearsal for the inevitable European war. However, the bonds he had formed with Spain were not the only reason to explain the attraction he felt for the war. Hemingway saw in the Spanish tragedy the opportunity to quench his desire for living new adventures, which might furnish him with materials for his fiction, just like his experiences in the Great War and Africa. Furthermore, the journey to Spain was the perfect excuse to leave behind his turbulent relationship with Boleyn. The Spanish War was not only the shelter to get away from his second wife, but also the place to start a new adulterous relation, in this case with the journalist Martha Gellhorn, whom he finally married. During the first month of the conflict, Hemingway was devoted almost exclusively to buying medical material and ambulances for the legally elected Republic. In January 1937, he already managed two organizations to support the Spanish government: the Ambulance Committee and the American Friends of the Spanish Democracy. But his great contribution to Spain during the war was to report to the international community the evolution of war in this country, which had remained fairly undiscovered until the conflict broke out. On the occasion of the Spanish War, Hemingway resumed his activity as a journalist, which he had started before his first steps in fiction, and left in 1924. Between 1937 and 1938, Hemingway visited the country 4 times as a war correspondent for the North American newspaper Alliance, NANA. His chronicles cover the main episodes of the war, such as the battles of Guadalajara, Teruel, Del Chite, or the Ebro River, or the combats on the outskirts of Madrid. While reading them, one has the impression that Hemingway took pains to convey the idea that his life was in constant danger, that he wanted to build a myth of himself during the war. It is true, however, that his life was in real jeopardy, that every time he went to bed, he had to be under the threat of receiving the impact of a shell, for his room in the Hotel Florida in Madrid was on the front side of the building, facing the rebel big guns 2 miles away. There was also some underlying truth in what he had hinted sometimes, that he knew much more about warfare than journalists like Matthews or Sefton Delmer, and that the loyalist commanders regarded him as a consultant. Hemingway, according to Kenneth Sling, who's a biographer of Hemingway, Hemingway just duplicated Matthews' stuff, and after his third trip to Spain, John Wheeler did not renew his contract with NANA. But what is clear is that he held relationship with several commanders and officers under them whom he accompanied in some operations. The officer who guided him in the Guadalajara front was Colonel Hans Kallet, who commanded the 11th International Brigade. He also knew the officers and men of the 12th and 14th Brigades, especially the political commissar of the 12th, the German writer Gustav Regler, and the commander of the 14th, the Polish Walter. At Gaylord's, the hotel the Russians had taken over, Hemingway met 4 communist commanders: Enrique Liste, a former quarryman who had led a revolution in La Coruña at the beginning of the war, was the most ruthless of them. Another was Juan Modesto, who had been a woodcutter and served as a surgeon in the Spanish Foreign Legion under Franco. The third was Valentín González, known as El Campesino, the peasant, since the communists wanted to use him to attract the peasantry into the party. And the fourth was the Hungarian Emilio Klett. These relationships enabled Hemingway to follow accurately the evolution of some important operations throughout the war. The intimacy he held with these leaders made many people label him as a communist. However, like writers such as George Orwell, the American author supported communism in Spain for practical rather than ideological reasons. In fact, he would say that, "Now I can't be a communist because I believe only in one thing, liberty." Therefore, Hemingway saw in the communist discipline a tendency to extinguish any kind of democracy, just as Orwell denounces in Homage to Catalonia. Nevertheless, he seemed not to care about it, as he thought that, although, and I quote, "the Reds may be as bad as they said, they are the people of the country." Moreover, Hemingway believed that fascism could only be defeated through the communist discipline and efficiency, though that could mean the suppression of liberty. One of the episodes in which the author seemed to corroborate this position was the disagreement with his close friend John Dos Passos. Having been found guilty of treason, the communist authorities ordered the execution of José Robles, the Spanish translator and friend of Dos Passos. Albeit he was convinced that Robles was innocent and tried to make Hemingway pursue the head of the Department of Justice, José Quintanilla, to stop the execution, Hemingway did not do anything to prevent it. His response after the death of Robles was that if he was dead, it was because he must have been a spy. However, the author always struggled to stick to his intention of not being committed to any political option. Communism was not an exception, as we can see in the severe criticism he shows against several communist leaders in For Whom the Bell Tolls, like André Marti or La Pasionaria. In May 1937, the American writer returned to the US to attend the second American Writers' Congress in order to make the American authors conscious about the need to help the Spanish Republic. During this stay in the US, he wrote the narration for The Spanish Earth, the movie he made in collaboration with Joris Ivens and John Dos Passos, and showed it in the White House and later in Hollywood, where they expected to obtain financial support from tycoons and movie stars. In the fall, Hemingway set out for Spain again to write newspaper pieces and his play, The Fifth Column. The scenario he found then was devastating. Madrid was in a critical situation due to the constant bombardment and starvation, and the rebels already controlled three-fourths of the country. In 1938, he continued working as a journalist, in this case for Ken magazine, urging the US to abandon its neutrality and aid the Republic. After having spent the summer in Key West, Florida, Hemingway returned to Spain for the fourth and last time during the war. He was then totally sure about the imminent defeat of the Loyalist Army, which took place in April 1939. His experience in the Spanish Civil War was really fruitful in terms of his literary and journalistic writings. Including journalism, Hemingway wrote more about this war than any other topic. 30 news dispatches to Nana, miscellaneous pieces for new messes, one for the Russian newspaper Pravda, 12 for Ken magazine, the narration for the film The Spanish Earth, the play The Fifth Column, half a dozen of short stories like Night Before Battle, The Butterfly in the Tank, The Old Man at the Bridge, and so on, and his longest and most appraised novel, For Whom the Bell Tolls. The rebel victory in 1939 prevented Hemingway to visit Spain in the following years. It was not until the summer 1953 that he could return to the country on the pretext of collecting materials to insert an appendix in Death in the Afternoon. However, his comeback was possible but under one condition imposed by Franco's dictatorship, that he had to restrain himself from talking about politics. Hemingway considered his new visit to Spain a true adventure involving several risks. Though strange it may seem, these dangers increased his desire to return to the country he had loved so much. During this new visit, Hemingway established a close friendship with the matador Antonio Ordóñez, and he could show to his wife Mary the landscapes near Madrid, which inspired him to write For Whom the Bell Tolls. The author last stayed in Spain in 1960, when he was sunk in a deep depression which drove him to commit suicide the next year. However, by that time, he had still some reasons to go on living, and one of them was his passion for Spain. Thank you very much.
And we have time for questions. Yeah, right here.
Yeah. Do you think Hemingway would still love Spain the way it is today?
I think that Hemingway would be really angry with the situation that we've got in Spain, right? Because of economy, the poor situation of the economy, because the bad performance of politicians, because of corruption. So I think this would be angry and sad at the same time.
What's the Spanish, contemporary Spanish reading today? How do they feel about Hemingway? You told us about what Hemingway thought about Spain. What did the Spanish think about Hemingway?
When you talk about Hemingway in Spain, the first thing they think is bulls, San Fermín, Pamplona, and so on. It's sad. It's not for me to see that many people there in Spain establish a relationship between Hemingway and Fiesta, on the Fiesta. They don't see beyond that.
Are there other writers who treated the bullfights in the same way as Hemingway, or something similar about the meaning of the man and the animal and the spiritual dimension you talk about? Or do you think that's really just his point?
Honestly, I don't know. Authors who dealt with bullfighting the same way. I know authors who dealt with bullfighting, they were attracted by bullfighting, just Gerald Brennan, who's an English writer who lived in Spain during many years. He was contemporary of Hemingway, and by the way, he met Hemingway in Andalusia. There were also many romantic writers, as I said, like Dumas, Alexander, the French Dumas, Mérimée also. But as far as I know, I don't know if authors who dealt with bullfighting the same way. I don't know. Probably there may be authors, but
is it a frequent subject in Spanish literature?
No, it's not very frequent in Spanish literature. I don't know why, but.
There is the film by Almodóvar, The Matador.
Oh, yeah. I'm very fond of Almodóvar. Or really, he's got a very particular style of making movies. And you're right, sometimes he deals with the topic of performing. Probably, there are not many authors in Spanish literature dealing with this topic because it's a topic, it's one of our stereotypes. When people think of Spain abroad, mm-hmm. they only think about good fights and good food, and so we want to to project another image outside Spain.
Back at the back.
Yes, you said Hemingway would be upset with the economic situation in Spain. What about all the changes in terms of Spain? He was upset when he went to San Fermín and Pamplona the second time, and it seemed like it had been Americanized.
Yeah.
What would he think now of Spain as a member of the European community and a major world trading partner?
He would also be, this is my opinion, upset. Because he loved Spain in the same way as Romantic writers did, you know, as an isolated, wild land, okay, not corrupted by the Western civilization. It was in the same way as Romantic writers did in the 19th century.
You alluded to the political situation in Spain now. To what do you attribute the decline? That situation, the state that it's in now.
Sorry, I can't understand.
It was asking you, to what do you, the current state of the economy, to what do you attribute that? We talked a bit at lunch about this, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's really serious.
Well, what cause? What do you think caused that deterioration?
The cause. I think that everything boils down to a question of mind, how to deal with things. I think that in Spain, people should have a stronger philosophy of hard work. People are used to receive funds from the state, from the government, without doing anything. And that's a problem. We have to change our mind. We have to change our mind. I think it's sad to say something like this, but it's true. It's my point of view. It's a terrible situation that we've got there. It's not the same as Greece, but we've got a 23% unemployment right now. We're having problems at my own university. I couldn't obtain any sort of funds to come here to the States. We don't have funds for anything, for buying books for research projects. We're lucky that we can be paid every month. So it's, the current government, which was elected in December, they've got hard work to do.
Over here.
Yeah. Is it true that bullfighting is now declining in Spain, that it's not so popular?
Yeah. There are some regions, for example, in Catalonia, it has been forbidden. It is forbidden. Yeah.
So what do you think about that? Does that change the culture, or has the culture changed?
It's a difficult question. Well, I'm not really fond of bullfights. I like to go to the country and to see bullfights in the country. But I don't really like bullfights. I'm interested in bullfights, but in the sense of, in the literary sense, as you can see here. I like to see how Hemingway dealt with bullfights. But I'm not really fond of bullfighting. I, as a child, I went to some of them, but I don't really like. I like the animal. I like everything related to bulls. I think it's a beautiful animal.
You think that's pretty common amongst your generation, though? There's kind of turning away from it.
Yeah, in our generation, is people don't like, many people, young people don't like. Yeah, there are regions in Catalonia which have forbidden movements.
Yeah, over here.
Yeah. Are the younger generations perhaps more indoors people? I mean, Hemingway was more like the outdoors type of man, doing fishing and fighting, those type of things. Do you see the younger generation starting to?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's Hemingway loved sports, any kind of sports. So that's for Hemingway loved action, and I think the main reason why Hemingway loved bullfighting was the philosophy or the vision of life and death he discovered or he saw in bullfighting. So I think it was the main reason. Probably, yeah, there is something. If Hemingway would live nowadays, he wouldn't probably like bullfighting. I don't know. It's something that we'll never know.
Here and then over there. Yeah.
Yeah. We recently read the Spanish novelist Perez Reverte's novel Queen of the South. I'm just wondering if Spanish novelists are influenced at all by Hemingway.
Oh yeah, Hemingway. There is, for example, some novelists like Torrente Ballester. Torrente Ballester is one of the most clear examples in Spanish literature of author who has been influenced by Hemingway. So I think that Hemingway has a great influence in many novelists and writers in Spain.
And back to you, what?
Is it true that bullfighting continues mainly because it's being subsidized by the government?
Continues.
I mean, you indicated that it's declining, but the fact that it hasn't declined more is because it is subsidized by the government.
Yeah, there are. I'm not a specialist in bullfighting and bullfighting management, but I think it's clear that there are economic interest because bull rings are run by private enterprises, not as much by the government. We don't have a situation right now to fund bull rings, but in many cases it's due to economical interest. And we also have to take into account that there are many people who are not youngsters that like bullfights, and they want to preserve bullfights as a cultural heritage. Mm-hmm. It's not a very easy matter. It's not a very easy matter.
Over here.
American students who study Spanish literature, they talk about Don Quixote and do Spanish students that are studying American literature, do they study Hemingway?
I would like to, but they don't. They don't.
Who do they read primarily?
We try that they read something of American literature, but we don't have time to read the 20th century. They probably they deal with authors from the colonial period, like, you know, probably Ambrose and so on. And later on, Edgar Allan Poe, you know, that we've got specialists there that we're doing. Fortunately, this year, we got a new, I don't know how to say it, like a study plan or something like that, in which there is a new subject, and the subject is American literature. I would love to teach American literature. And especially Hemingway.
I think we have time for one more question. It's a pleasure to have you with us tonight. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We too thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll join us next week when Michael Trapasso will enlighten us about his most recent trip to the big game parks of South Africa. So thank you and good evening.